Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, welcome back to In the Pink, in association with Bose. Thanks so much for the incredible feedback that we had for the one-off special we did remembering Caroline Flack. It was an amazing process, kind of like therapy, to be honest. It was just really wonderful hearing all those stories from her friends, and I hope that it was a fitting tribute to our beautiful pal Caroline. Okay, so it's a new series of In the Pink, and a huge thank you to Bose for their continued support of this podcast. And we kick things off with a Danish driver in Formula One. I've given it away already, haven't I? I am, of course, talking about Kevin Magnussen. Now, Kev is a really good bloke. He's kind of under the radar when it comes to television interviews and social media, but he's a cool guy, a lovely bloke, and a passionate racer. We talk about his upbringing, the importance and support of his wife and family. We talk about coping mechanisms through the COVID crisis. And we talk about his future plans. Because, as you well know, he is leaving Haas at the end of the season. And with options quickly running out throughout Formula One, he may well have to leave the sport as well. So here he is, Kevin Magnussen. What a pleasure it was to chat to him. Here he is on In the Pink. Well, hi, Kev. It's great to see you.
And great to see you.
I hope you're okay. Tell us about your headache. What, unfortunately, your retirement at the end of the last race. That was a bit worrying, wasn't it?
No, not really. I mean, we all have headaches sometimes. It's not the end of the world, but it was just We were dead last, and you know, this problem with the gearbox was just really, it was costing me around 6/10 of a second per lap. So, you know, it was pretty hopeless anyway. And then, you know, I started getting really bad headache from those upshifts, that every time I upshifted, you know, I got this big bang. Our head is resting against, you know, a pretty solid headrest. So every upshift, it was like a bit of a kick in the head, you know, and you do like, I don't know, maybe 30 upshifts or so on a lap. So 30 times a lap, you get this bang. And then after 40 laps or so, it was just getting a bit too much. So, but, you know, if I had something to fight for, I would have for sure continued. You know, it just, we didn't have anything to fight for.
It was interesting because you said, you know, this is my job, I've got to do it. But it gets to a point, as you say, if there's nothing on the table, then all you're doing is punishing yourself, like, unnecessarily.
Exactly. Yeah, and they were asking me whether I would want, if I wanted to retire, and I was like, well, I can't really make that call. You've got to make that. It's not my place to say, I don't want to drive anymore, you know.
So no lasting effect. You don't feel, you're not in pain now or anything.
Not at all. Not even, you know, an hour after the race, I was fine. It wasn't. Right. No drama.
Good. I expect nothing less. I know that you're a pretty tough customer. It would take a lot to put you off your stride. Okay, so the news, obviously, of leaving the team must have sunk in now. You've had a bit of time to reflect. How are you feeling about it?
Well, yeah, it wasn't really such a big news for me. You know, it was very expected. I knew what the situation was like in the team. You know, when the season got delayed already and those races got cancelled, that meant, you know, reduced income for all teams. And for Haas, that was, you know, as a small privately owned team, that was going to hit hard. So, you know, I expected some issues, and I was, you know, wondering whether the team would survive at all. And the team was, you know, Günther and Gene have been working really hard to keep the team alive. So I knew that it was going to be a tricky situation. And, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, they went another direction, and, you know, in a direction that I can totally understand, given the circumstances of the world right now. So, yeah, not what I had hoped for. And, you know, I feel not what the team had hoped for, but at the end of the day, they will surely find some new good drivers that can help the team in the future as well.
So now the dust has settled somewhat, how do you feel about your future? I mean, obviously, your options are limited in Formula One now that Alfa Romeo have confirmed Giovinazzi and Raikkonen for another year. Is there any possibility you can stay in the sport?
There is opportunities. There is still open seats, I would say, but, you know, it's tricky. I don't have the kind of backing that a lot of drivers have out there. So I'm not only competing on, you know, in terms of talent and what I can deliver in the car. It's also there's a lot of commercial stuff as well that has to come with that. So I think it's tricky, and also there's not many competitive seats out there. And I've now been in Formula One for, you know, in effect 7 years, since 2014, and I haven't won a race for 7 years, you know, and I used to, all my career since I was in go-karts, you know, I used to win races every season, at least some races, and, you know, fighting for the championships every year. And, you know, that mentality is what has driven me to this point, and what has given me these opportunities in Formula One. And then, you know, I miss that kind of feeling, and I miss that kind of state of mind where you wake up every morning and what you think about is that next win that you're pursuing.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really been there for 7 years. So, because in Formula One, if you're not in the right car, you know your chances are very, very slim of winning. You might have a shot at a podium or something, and, you know, it's not impossible. Gasly showed that this year, that, you know, there is that chance. It's just so minimal that it's hard to really wake up every day and you know, feel that energy of this winning mentality.
So does that mean you'd rather go elsewhere and get that buzz, or would you stay in Formula One even if you knew it was only going to be fighting for, say, sixth or seventh, week in, week out?
It's hard, isn't it? Because if I could stay with Haas or somewhere in the same sort of competitiveness. I mean, this year Haas, and last year, to be honest, the Haas have been struggling a lot, but I know what the team can do, and I think, you know, they're capable of being in the, you know, in the top of the midfield. I think they are able, and we showed that in 2018. We were really, you know, front runners in the midfield, and got fifth in the Constructors' Championship. And yeah, so that kind of level is interesting, because then you are able to show your talent and your ability, you know, and you kind of, you know, try and look good for the big teams. And then that dream of winning, and that you know, you could still say that there's a chance that you could get into a good team like that. But if you're fighting at the back, then the big teams aren't going to look at you, really, not seriously. It's a very slim chance then. So it's a strange one, and, you know, you've got to look at your options, look at what's available and what's possible, and then see if it works for you. It's difficult, but I miss winning. I'd love to be winning in Formula One, but it doesn't look easy.
No, I bet. It's funny, actually, because we obviously all love the sport and there's plenty to enjoy about Formula One, but there's also like some fundamental flaws in the sport. You know, for example, if you're not in the best car, you can be a brilliant driver and not be able to show it. And equally, the pay driver issue. I mean, do you think pay drivers undermine the sport as a whole, or do you think it's the simple economics of it that they're needed?
It's really difficult to define a pay driver also, because, you know, I think all drivers, you know, bring with them some sort of commercial value. There is drivers that, you know, just, you know, pay a check and then, you know, get their seats. There's some drivers that, you know, families have money and they can buy teams and, you know, really go flat out like that. But I think all drivers, even the very good ones, they bring with them some sort of commercial value, whether it be partners that the drivers have that then follow them into the teams and support the teams if the driver is the right one. And, you know, so there's that for all drivers, I think, and it's hard to define a paid driver. But yeah, I think it's tough when the driver is, you know, responsible for such a big part of the commercial package. And in football, it works easier because the players are owned by the clubs, and they, you know, the clubs buy them off each other, and they go on loans to other clubs, and so you know that there will be, you know, you have a value as a player. If you're in a club, then that club will have to sell you to another club because you know, they need you are value and asset for them. So that's not how it works in Formula One, unfortunately. But that's, you know, it will never change. That's how it is. But motorsport is difficult in that way.
I mean, I have to say, I was sort of quite surprised with Haas that both of you were released by the team, because there's a sense that if they get two young drivers in who bring a load of cash, that's all well and good. And I remember talking to Gunther Steiner about the fact that he had to top up to the weight that the cap, you know, rather than get down to it, you know, and that's a rare position to be in. You obviously, Mercedes have got to come down to meet it. He's got to go up. But surely you need some experience in there. Surely you need somebody like you who's got a load of experience under their belt that can help and guide and give decent feedback. I mean, I look at Williams with when they went for two pay drivers and it didn't work. They kind of went backwards. Was it Sorokin and Latifi? No, am I getting it right? This is what happens to your brain when you've been in isolation for too long.
I know.
I don't even know what day of the week it is. But my point is, surely you need a blend of both experience, yeah, and an injection of cash.
Ideally, yes. I think you're right. But then I think, you know, depending on who they announce, I think there is some young drivers out there that really, you know, are good drivers. I think Schumacher's got to be on the list. I don't know these things. They don't, you know, neither Gunther or Gene tell me any of this. But I'm assuming that Schumacher is on the list. Mm. And, you know, I've met him and talked to him, and he seems like a very bright young lad. And obviously he's a big talent. He's leading the F2 championships and driving brilliantly. So I think, you know, he certainly is going to be, you know, good, whatever he, you know, brings as a, of, you know, deals with him. But I'm sure just in the driving and his ability, I think he's going to be great for the team. And then whoever sits in the other car, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think they will need someone that brings some sort of package with him, and I don't know who that's going to be, but it would surely be better if you have some experience. But I'm just saying, I think there's some young drivers, Schumacher included, that could, you know, make up for that and get on top of it quickly.
Yeah. Okay. I think it was Sorokin and Stroll I was thinking of in Williams.
Yeah. Yeah.
They partnered them together. Okay. Good. What's your relationship with Gunther like? Because you seem very sort of phlegmatic about all of this. You seem very respectful and
not bitter or angry in any way. You haven't sort of publicly slated them. You've been quite understanding of their situation. Is that a reflection of your relationship with him or with the team generally? Because you've kind of, you have been with them for some time now.
Yeah, I think they've just, you know, Günther and Gene have, you know, they've both always treated me very well and been very frank with me and, you know, honest. And it's just been a very, you know, transparent and an easygoing relationship from the beginning. You know, I was with Renault in 2016 and I started speaking. Well, I spoke to Günther and Gene the first time in 2015, I think. Yeah, 15. And that was, we spoke about me joining them for 2016, for the first year. That didn't happen. I went with Renault. Then I had that season with Renault and we started talking again. And I had an option to stay with Renault for another year, but then Günther approached me and offered me a 2-year deal. So I, you know, and Günther and Gene were very keen and I just felt a big commitment for them. So I felt that would be a better environment to be in, where, you know, Renault was a little bit uncertain. There was a lot of drivers on their list and they weren't as kind of focused as I felt Günther and Gene was. So I went with them. And it was such an easy deal to do. You know, it was just like they wanted me, I wanted them. And, you know, off we went. And there was no BS. You know, it was very, very easy. And I just, you know, that's been the whole, those 4 years of all, you know, it's just been very easy. And there's not been any, there's no real politics. It's a real racing team. You know, it's a bit like dealing with, you know, a good old Formula 3 team or something, you know, in terms of that, you know, how direct the management works, and there's not a whole big corporation behind with a whole board of people trying to make decisions. It's pretty easy in that regard. So, and yeah, you know, now we're in this situation, and as you said, I am pretty, you know, frank and kind of, yeah, understanding of the situation. I think I understand what you know, what they need and what kind of situation they're in, and you know, what can I do? You know, I understand, so there's no reason to be bitter.
The world continues to evolve and the new norm isn't fully clear yet. But what does remain constant is the core message from our friends at Bose. Stay calm, stay centered, and stay connected. Communication is key in everything we do and goes a long way to nurturing both ourselves and our relationships with others. So continue to talk about what matters to you. And don't be afraid to block out unhelpful noise or indeed to embrace silence, because doing both can be great. Some of the ways we work will have changed forever. Embrace that. Make those new ways work for you. Shape the new norm to suit you. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
It really strikes me that you hate the politics of Formula One. I mean, you've touched on it there. There is so much of that that swirls around and detracts from what you're really there to do, which is race.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I think there is that kind of thing in all sort of big sports. You know, I'm sure there is in football and boxing and, you know, also these top sports, there would be this kind of thing around, because it's all very commercial and there's a lot of money involved and it's a big business. Mm. But yeah, me as a sportsman and a racing driver, I would, you know, I prefer to just be what I am, a racing driver, you know, and apart from that, just a normal guy, you know. And
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I don't do well with you know, I am who I am, and you know, I struggle if I feel that there is you know, sometimes you can sense or some sort of like fakeness and people not being honest, and that's what that I struggle with. That I prefer that people just tell you if they're unhappy or if they're happy, and you know, with the job I'm doing, and that's certainly been the case in Haas.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, how would you sort of summarize the season so far with Haas? If we're looking back at some of your races, there's been moments of brilliance. I'd say at the starts, like, what is it about your starts? Is that like a self-fulfilling prophecy now? You're like, everyone's expecting me to start well, and I can start well, yeah. So I start well.
Exactly. I mean, it's become a pretty, there's some pressure building up around those first laps now, because I've done so many of them this year, and yeah. So, but it's fine. I mean, I enjoy it. It's become, you know, something that I can get excited about, you know, these first laps, because we don't have the pace this year to do much, you know, in the races. We're relying on sort of, you know, some extraordinary things happening. And if there's just a normal race, you know, one stop, no safety cars and no weather coming in, then it's very, very tricky for us to do anything. So we are relying on these, like, you know, slightly out of the ordinary things to happen, like safety cars, red flags, weather, stuff like that. And when we scored points in Hungary, that was what happened. There was a weather change, and we took an opportunity. We actually got penalized for it because we were speaking on the radio, and yeah. So, but anyway, it paid off, and we scored a point there, even though we finished on the road ninth. But that's really the theme of this year, is to really take risks, because there's nothing to gain from 11th and down to 20th, just zero. There's nothing, and you know, that means if you're in that end, bottom end of the grid, you need to take a lot of risk. So that goes for the first lap as well.
But you know, I do find it quite depressing that you're kind of having to celebrate a ninth place when you, as you've touched on, look at your World Series by Renault record of what, five wins, six, in fact, if you hadn't been disqualified for one of them. But you know, it doesn't seem right that you're just fighting for the single point here and there, and that's the highlight of the season.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to motivate yourself for that. I mean, and it's become easier because I have such a good relationship with the team, and you know, I feel like a team. I don't feel like I'm a driver, yeah. You know, driving for Formula One team, and then that, you know, it's not two separate things. We're one team.
Yeah.
And you know, we feel all those emotions together. And I think when we do well, we're all in that together, and we feel good about it together. And so it's a little bit that helps with that motivation. And then of course, you know, I have been dreaming about Formula One and getting success in Formula One since I was a little kid. So, you know, I'm still in that. I'm still in the sport, and I'm still racing in Formula One cars. So there's a lot of things that is there to motivate you. But as you said, before I got to Formula One in that 2013 season, I was on the podium, I think 14 or 15 times out of 17 races. And you know, every weekend there was that chance of winning races, and I won six, and, you know, I won the championship. And before that in F3, in British F3, I won races, you know, a lot of times there, and, you know, finished second in the championship, but was always fighting all the way through the season with that championship in mind. And it's tough when you don't have any chance of that, you know, so, and I miss that a lot.
So aside from the obvious power deficit with the engine, what do you think has been the problem this year? Because you've obviously got the talent, and you feel, particularly on past performances, that the car is capable of more. What do you think is missing this year?
Well, this year, I don't think the car is capable of more. I think we're getting a lot out of it. I do think we have, you know, we've been hindered by all of this, the crisis that we are in. So we haven't been developing the car at all this year. There's not been one upgrade. We're still running parts, actual parts that we were running in winter testing, you know, that haven't even been changed. So, you know, it's been a real sort of a strange year that we haven't touched the car. We've made a lot of progress on setup. We keep finding a little bit more. And actually, we've got to a point where the car is really handling very well, because we've refined it and we've got the very best out of this car. But we need more, you know, downforce, and we need more power, and, you know, those things are really holding us back. So I don't think that this year's car has a lot more potential. It would have if we were developing it and putting more downforce on. And but I think, yeah, I don't think that's gonna be until 22 when the new cars come that Haas will have a great chance of moving up again. Unless, well, you know,
it's sad to hear you say Haas instead of we. You nearly said we and corrected yourself. Oh, I mean, yeah. Look, there's obviously lots of options out there aside from Formula One for you in your future. And I remember you driving the dirt car. Was it last year? The Tony Stewart car at the Carolina Speedway. Like, you just have a passion for racing, pretty much anything, don't you?
I do, yeah. I mean, I grew up in a motorsport family. You know, it's there's so many motorsport passionists in my family. You know, my dad has been Formula One. He's still racing. I might race with him in the future. You know, against him or with him, I don't know. But it's very, very passionate family. And my granddad is, you know, he was a motorcycle fanatic and built cars himself. And, you know, my uncle, my cousins, two cousins, my brother, it's all, you know, racing. And so, yeah, I have a lot of passion, and it's basically been my life, all my life.
I mean, do you think that was your destiny there? Do you think it's in your DNA? Was there ever going to be another course for you in life other than racing?
I've certainly never felt that there was any other cause. I mean, you know, as a kid especially, that motorsport was all I had. It was, you know, it was all that I was interested in. I couldn't see anything else of value in life other than motorsport. Which now I grew up, I'm now a married man, and, you know, I have other values in life and things that mean just as much to me as motorsport. But, you know, it's it really has been the, you know, the theme of my life. And you know, I started driving go-karts when I was 2 years old, and, you know, I had an uncle that was super ambitious on my behalf, my dad as well, but especially my uncle. And, you know, it was just, yeah, it was in the cards that I was gonna, you know, my uncle did this thing with my dad. They did it together, and all the way through karting, and they traveled Europe together. And then my dad went on to, you know, he then made it as a professional driver, and my uncle got sidelined a little bit. So it was perfect for my uncle that my dad then had a boy that he could do it all over again. So, you know, it was very much in the cards.
That's so nice. And what about your wife? What does she think of Formula One? Is she a fan? Was she a fan before she met you? Or is she kind of opening her mind to the world?
Yeah, she didn't know much about it. And she is from a family that never watched motorsport, had no idea about it. So, yeah, she's she's had to learn a lot of things, but I have to say she's very, for a non, you know, motorsport fan, she's learned a lot. And, you know, she's someone that, of course, when her husband is racing in Formula One, it's only natural that she's watching it and, you know, cheering for me. So yeah, it's good. It's also good not to, you know, as I said, all of my family, you know, all we talk about is motorsport. So it would be just too much if my wife was like a, you know, petrol head as well.
I was going to say, I bet it's refreshing that she doesn't bombard you. Like when you, particularly this season, when you're coming back from some tough weekends, it must be nice to sort of decompress and just talk about anything other than racing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important because even though, you know, how much I love it, you know, it still can get too much, you know, and you're so focused during the weekends and you're exhausted after that weekend because all your energy has been put into trying to find little, you know, setup tweaks or, you know, refining your driving on track and those things. So when you get off a weekend like that, you just want to switch off and watch a movie and, you know, relax.
How hard is it to switch off though? Because I would imagine if you're just constantly looking for answers, it kind of stuff that would keep you awake at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I find it quite easy to switch off when I get back home after race weekend. But, you know, recently, you know, I've had to try and sort out my future for next year. And it's so that takes a lot of my time. So right now, those last month or two have been pretty intense. You know, there's a lot of always on the phone and emails and, you know, speaking about this. So I'm looking forward to having my future sorted and, you know, so I can just sort of relax a little bit again.
So what's your gut feeling? When do you think you'll make a decision?
I think it should be within November. I hope that I will have everything sorted and I can, you know, put my phone down, put the laptop down as well and just sit back a little bit.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good to get it done before Christmas, definitely.
In the Pink and Bose want to support you in whatever way we can during these uncertain and constantly evolving times. So we're giving away more noise-cancelling headphones to bring some added calm to your life. To win the headphones, just tag in the three friends you're most looking forward to reconnecting with once lockdown is fully lifted. Always include the hashtag Bose, and those headphones could be yours. Good luck and stay connected.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? When you think back, and I remember being in Australia at the time when you came second on your debut. I mean, you must have thought, this is beyond my wildest dreams and this is going to be the first of many podiums. And it just doesn't seem right or fair that, you know, it could potentially be your only podium in Formula One. How do you look back on that race? And actually, those listening... Well, no, actually, I kind of don't Google it, anyone listening now, but who is the only person to better Kevin's performance on a debut? Do you know, Kev?
I don't think there is any.
There's one driver back in the 60s.
Oh, someone won.
Yep. Hey, and really? I thought you were a bit of a history nose. I thought you loved your...
Yeah, I honestly did not know I am, but I did not know anyone had better at that.
Okay, I'll tell
somebody
you.
Somebody won that debut.
Yeah, I'll tell you the answer at the end of the podcast so that it gives us a chance to go and like work out their answers. They've got to be honest with themselves, though. They're not allowed to Google it. but I remember interviewing you after that race and you were just buzzing. I mean, that was bonkers, wasn't it?
It was. You know, it's like you dream of something your whole life. And, you know, ever since I was a little kid, that was my dream. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to achieve. You know, getting to Formula One is very, very difficult. And I dedicated my whole life to that, you know, and all of my childhood, all my teenage years went, you know, towards that. And I invested all my time to achieve that goal. And then, you know, slowly you realize that it's going to happen. You know, I got a contract with McLaren. I got a, you know, test driver role with them. And then, you know, testing the car for the first time, then I won that championship in World Series, which then enabled me, you know, gave me that seat in McLaren. And then beating, you go to the first race.
Beating Stoffel Vanthoorne in the process.
Yeah.
You know, what's no mean feat. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
Yes. And then, you know, slowly it just starts happening. And eventually, yeah, I was at that first race. And I remember being on the grid in Australia for my first race. And I didn't feel any nerves. And I was like, this is weird. You know, I've now come to the, like, this is my highlight in my life. And I feel no nerves. You know, I don't feel nervous at all. And I think that was just because my brain couldn't, you know, I couldn't process it. I don't think it didn't feel real. So I was there on the grid, and you know, yeah, I was about to start my first Formula One race, and I was in P4, and I'm racing with McLaren, and you know, it was just too much for my brain to really work out. And then, you know, it worked out for me because I didn't feel any nerves and had a good race and finished third on the road, then got promoted to second, and it was just too much for my brain to really, you know, function.
Do you know what though? Maybe that's the answer. Maybe we just all overthink things too much, and that is the kind of paralysis by analysis. You know, if we absorb it too much, we turn it into nerves and or a negative energy potentially. Perhaps because you just sort of let it flow over you, it wasn't able to get a grip of you. I mean, in a way, were you kind of thinking, why aren't I more nervous?
I was almost getting nervous about not being nervous because, you know, it's like you always want to feel some sort of little nerve because it kind of just keeps you sharp.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you're ready and all your whole body is fired up for what you're about to do. And when I was there, I felt a little bit too relaxed, and I was wondering whether I would be sharp enough, you know, if I was in the right sort of place of mind. But, you know, I had a very good race, and it helped me. You know, I was just able to focus and not mess up, because you could easily imagine a young guy like I was, you know, in my first race with McLaren and everything. It was just so much that you could become too nervy. So I think I had, even though I felt weird about not feeling anything, I probably it was a good thing.
Yeah, it feels, I don't know. I feel like there's positives that listeners can take from this also going into lockdown, because I think there's a lot of anxiety and nerves around at the moment, this sort of fear of the unknown, overanalyzing, not having enough information and coming to your own conclusions about stuff. Like, what advice do you think? I don't know. It's a big ask. I'm not expecting you to be the nation's therapist, but what would you say? Because you do seem to have a very kind of level, calm head on your shoulders. What would you say to people that are listening that are perhaps feeling the future's a bit bleak at the moment?
Yeah, I would say, even though you say I seem like a level-headed guy, which I think I am, but I also feel that the world is in a bit of a tricky state right now, and it's especially because we can't socialize, which is like, you know, humans need to be socializing. It's like the most important thing for a human being, to be able to be around people that we care about and love. And that's being stopped right now. So it doesn't get much worse than this, I think. And of course, it could be worse. We could all be ill, and we could all be, you know, there's a lot of things that could be worse. And I think, you know, I think this is going to be, I don't know what, you know, I don't know anything about it, but I just have a very strong feeling that we'll get over this, and that, you know, it will come back to normal. And even if it's going to take a year, or it certainly took a year already almost, but even if it's going to take two, it's still going to, you know, there's still going to be a lot of life left to enjoy. And I think probably we will have learned a lot of things from this time as well. Certainly for myself, I've realized, you know, I've kind of felt very, very much what my true values are in life. And I think I've feared being super bored and not knowing what to do with myself in these lockdown periods, especially in the first one. But I realized what a blessing it is to be able to sit in a house, you know, with a roof over your head, you have a bed, you know, you have my wife around me, And, you know, just you have a lot of time to think about the things that you do have, even if it's a lockdown or, you know, a crazy situation. There's a lot of good things. And if you have family and friends and a good health, then you're already very, very privileged.
Mm. It's so true. It's so true. It is. It does give you the opportunity to be very grateful, doesn't it? I read a sweet thing actually on Instagram yesterday that said, we're not all in the same boat, but we are all in the same storm. So support each other. Don't judge. Be kind. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think one of the things about this pandemic is it is a real leveler. And so for fans of the sport, fans of yours, to hear someone like you who they look up to say, look, you know, I feel the same as you. I'm just a human. And they can kind of take some strength from that. So that's really nice. I tell you, something else I heard about you was that you were a big fan of Stirling Moss. And
yeah,
we haven't had a proper chat since his passing earlier this year. Tell us about your admiration and respect and love of him and for the history of the sport. You know, where does that come from? Because you're not just about jumping in a car and racing yourself. You do have a real appreciation for the history of Formula One and all manner of motorsport, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And you know, with Stirling, I had the chance to meet him. I'm very good friends with Matt Bishop from McLaren. He was the comms director at McLaren when I raced there. And, you know, I became very close friends with him. And then one day I was reading about Stirling and, you know, watching videos from his time racing. And, you know, I just felt he's, you know, such a cool guy. And I texted Matt and I said, can you get me his autograph, do you think? Because I knew that he knows Stirling. And then, you know, I asked him for his autograph. And, you know, an hour or so later, Matt texted me back and said, why don't we just go and visit him, go for lunch at his home? So I was like, yeah, of course, that would be amazing. And we went and had lunch. I spent, you know, 2 or 3 hours in him and Susie's home. And yeah, it was just amazing, you know, to sit and hear all his stories. And I could really feel the same passion that I have, you know, so pure passion for racing and, you know, going fast and pushing the limits. And you know, he was a real racing driver in my eyes. And just back then, you know, it wasn't at all the same as it is now. You know, back then they were a bunch of guys that got together, a little race team, and traveled the world and did all sorts of races, not only Formula One. They were doing hill climbs and rallying and, you know, endurance racing. And, you know, they were doing everything they could get their hands on. And not because it made them, you know, super rich or anything else. They did it because they couldn't help it. They had to, you know. So it was only passion that drove them back then. And, I feel so lucky to have met this guy. You know, it's such a legend.
That actually sounds like your ideal life, what you just described.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would, if I had one wish, I would say, you know, that if I could be born 30 years or even 40 years earlier, that would have been maybe even 50.
Really?
Yeah, like it was just...
You and in a different era.
Yeah, if I could have been my age right now in the 70s, probably. I don't know. Maybe I think, you know, in Stirling's time in the 50s and 60s, it was pretty cool as well. But I think it would have been very good in the 70s, I think, with those big muscle cars that still had some downforce. But, you know, in the early stage of the aero era.
So what about driving his cars at Goodwood? That would be the ultimate, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I would love that. So if anyone needs a driver for one of Stirling's cars at Goodwood, give me a call.
That's so good. Kev, it's so lovely to talk to you. And look, I really hope that there's some good news about your future really soon, because you deserve it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Can I just do one quick thing at the end? I'll just clip up a little thing of quick fire round that I put on Instagram to direct people to the podcast. That would be great.
Yeah.
Right, let's think of some quick questions for you then. So I'll ask you what your first car was.
Yep.
The greatest F1 driver of all time. I think I know the answer. And then what else? Maybe something we don't know about you. Can you think of something completely random? Are you a good cook? Can you cook anything? Are you good at music? Or your favorite band, or your something random, something totally like another sport maybe, or
I don't know. It's always difficult. Tell me of something that people don't know about you.
I sleepwalk every night.
You sleepwalk? I sleepwalk.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Say that. Amazing. Yes. That sign of intelligence. You know that, don't you?
Is it? That's good.
Well, I don't know. I've had so many of those studies with the things all over my brain.
Oh, you do?
Oh, my God. I've had everything. Like,
see, why? Because you're worried about it.
Well, just because it was happening like every night, and it's so disruptive. But I was in when we went to the Austin Grand Prix, I sleptwalked and evacuated the hotel.
Really? You left the hotel?
No, so I went down and I told them there was a flood on my floor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, and I did it in I went to watch Manchester United play with my dad once. This is years ago. Took my dad for his birthday. Stayed up in Manchester, and I woke up on all fours in the corridor in just a t-shirt, crawling down the corridor, and all the football fans were coming up the corridor. I've done like 20 things like that. I am completely mad in my sleep. Like it.
Wow.
Yeah. So
okay, I can't beat that. I'm not that bad.
No, but that's a brilliant one. You can say you sleep, but that's brilliant. Okay,
cool. Yeah, cool.
And then at the end of it, I'll say to you, if people want to know more about you, what do they do? And you say, listen to In the Pink podcast.
Okay.
Is that okay? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Kev, what was your first car?
My first car was a Fiat Cinquecento.
Who's the greatest Formula One driver of all time?
In my mind, it's Stirling Moss. I would say Stirling Moss, even though my dad was a Formula One driver, and I think he was pretty great as well.
Tell us something we don't already know about you.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? But I sleepwalk. I'm a pretty bad sleepwalker, and recently my wife had to wake me up because I was crawling out the window, and we live on the second floor in the building, so that would have been pretty bad.
Ooh, all the best people are, Kev. I sleepwalk too. And if people want to know more about you, what do they do?
I think they should go and listen to In the Pink podcast.
Woo! Love it. Thank you so much. See you really soon, I hope.
Thank you.
Well, look, fingers crossed, I'll see you in Bahrain 2 in Abu Dhabi. Thank you so much, K-Mag. What a lovely chat. What a great bloke. And I'm sure and I hope that your future plans start shaping up nicely very soon, because you absolutely deserve it. With all that determination, passion and, of course, skill at just 28 years old, I'm sure that the future is very bright for our Danish friend. Okay, loads more great guests on the way on In the Pink, including Kevin's teammate, Romain Grosjean. He's coming on very soon. And Nicholas Latifi. So plenty more friends from Formula One. And a big shout out to our friends at Bose, because they've been great supporters and champions of this podcast. And they've given you, lucky lot, the chance to win some more headphones. So stay tuned as to how you can do that. But until next time, stay safe. Send me loads of messages. Let me know who else you want to hear from. And stay healthy. Look forward to chatting very soon here on In the Pink. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.